6:39 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. By the way, somebody sent me a good video of the Sphere in Las Vegas. That is an amazing facility. I had seen it in a bunch of places. I didn't really understand what it was, so that's pretty cool stuff. I agree. Wes Moreno, he is our Escambia County Administrator, joins us every Thursday, meeting or not, because there's plenty going on in the county. We want to understand, you know, what things are happening. Wes, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir. Oh, gonna have his phone on.
We lost him. We'll get him back. Wes, we'll call him back.
Things happen. Now I got to text
him. Cell phone dropped.
So we'll get Wes back on the line. I don't know what happened there. That was it. Might have been my fault. You know, I sometimes do press the wrong button. So
here he is coming back.
Anyway, 437-1620. You know, by the way, that's one thing I always say. You can actually text me questions if you want me to ask, you know, my guests. We don't do it a lot. I don't focus on it a lot. But it made me think of that because one of our regular interviews actually said, you know, maybe we should do like a Q&A sometime. I'm like, oh, that is a good idea. We'd done that before with Congressman Gates, and we'll see if we can do it again. Is he all ready? Oh, hold on. We got it ready? Why don't you...
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Wes is there. There we go. Hey, buddy, sorry about that. I think I pressed
the
wrong button.
My phone decided to restart.
Oh, all right. Well, then I'll blame you. All right. So, you know, fair enough. One thing I had wanted to ask you about is you guys are starting to do a like an education campaign for 911 calls because, and we've heard this from Eric Gilmore repeatedly and Chief Torcell as well, that one of the challenges, we have a lot of challenges in EMS. We have had a lot of challenges for a long time, but we're working on it. One of the challenges is the low priority, like the, you know, the alphas and the beta A and B acuity calls. But once you dispatch somebody and if they want to be treated, I mean, you have to do something. So trying to educate people not to abuse the 911 system. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're putting together some information. We got a pamphlet that we're working on, you know, when to call 911 or when to call for an ambulance, you know, having chest pains, shortness of breath. You know, call 911 for an ambulance if you're having, if you got a sprained ankle or, you know, maybe you got a minor burn on your hand or something, go to urgent care. If you have chronic issues, like I got back pain or I need blood help managing my blood pressure, maybe go to your primary care doctor. And it'll kind of go down from there. You know, don't call us if you just want to ride to the hospital or like in the past, sometimes we've had issues. They were taking the Sacred Heart, and then they get out, and they disappear, and they go to the mall and hang out. You know, we've had them call because one guy called because he was sweating too much. We've had all kinds of minor calls. So we're going to start a campaign. It'll kick off here in the next couple of weeks. And I think we'll hopefully get our message out and help us reduce some of those, I don't want to say nuisance calls that don't really require an ambulance.
I'll say nuisance if you won't, because, you know, maybe I don't have to watch my words quite as carefully. So, no, I think that's right. But the one question I do have about this, and it's amazing some of the stories that you hear, you know, I can't reach the remote and they call 911, like it's insane. But my one question is, in the overall scheme of the having too many calls, therefore stressing a system where we have historically not had enough employees, although we're pretty close to full now, where we haven't had enough trucks, although we're pretty close to full now, where we're dealing with the hospitals that are telling us to, you know, that they don't have enough people to take the patients off our hands so they can be freed up to go to other calls, although that's getting better. All of these things. In that whole scheme, how much, if you can quantify for me, is the low acuity, frivolous calls really responsible for? Is that just... Okay, there's 3 or 4% of these calls are that, or we're talking like 10 or 20%. What kind of? I know we hear these stories, but how significant is that as a part of the problem?
I don't know the exact percentage. I think it is a significant issue. Just from what I see, from what I hear, it depends on the day. You know, some weeks are not that bad, and some weeks it's every little thing. You know, like I said, the guy said he called because he's sweating too much. We had calls, cause like you said, they dropped the remote. We had calls, guy said something was wrong with his foot, when really what was wrong with his foot is if the sole would come off the bottom of his shoe. And he called 911. And so we get just a host of those kinds of calls. The exact percentage, I'm not sure, but we are hoping that this campaign will help. And additionally, you know, we are fully staffed in EMTs. We've been fully staffed in EMTs for a while now. And we're offering about 5 to 6 more positions in paramedics. Mm-hmm. And when they come on board, we'll be totally filled in paramedics. 2 years ago, we had 27 vacancies in paramedics and a whole host of vacancies in EMTs. And And so, you know, we will be full here shortly. And I say this, and it's because I know it's a work in progress. Just because you're fully staffed doesn't mean you're where you need to be. It just means you've reached a milestone. So we're going to continue to work on staffing. We may add, you know, we had 18 positions in this budget, and we'll start working on the next budget here in a couple of months. Well, I saw a picture of some new ambulances that rolled off the line yesterday. We should have those in a couple of weeks, 8 more. And so things are, they're slowly coming. You know, this stuff doesn't just happen overnight. And we know we're not where we need to be, but we are continuing to work that way.
And you know, as you have said many times, like the full employment thing, you know, just because you've got all of the people that you've budgeted positions for in, you know, roads or in, you know, public works or maintaining ditches, it doesn't mean that you have enough, because if you're at the same level you were 15 years ago, it's not enough, you know, so adding positions,
right, exactly.
And then filling them, adding trucks, you know, and filling all of that stuff. Things that are, you know, sort of Studio 850 did an article about this, and they kind of put two things together, and I just wanted to ask you whether there is a connection between them. The one is that there was an audit done on the whole process of getting the broadband done, and they had a lot of things that they said were really not done appropriately, including the putting back out for RFP after the first round of selection. But in sort of, again, in the Studio 850 article talking about this, is that the purchasing director, Jeffrey Lovingood, has resigned. So first question, was that connected to the broadband audit? And second question is, and what are you guys doing as a response of the audit and the criticisms of the process that came from that?
They are two totally separate issues. Had Jeffrey's departure had nothing to do, absolutely 1,000% nothing to do with the broadband, no matter what the conspiracies like to say. But there's nothing there. As far as the broadband on it, you know, Andrew, we resolicit stuff all the time. We just resolicited the changing rooms on Pensacola Beach because we only got one bidder. We're going to modify the scope and resolicit the Pensacola Beach fishing pier because it came in way over budget. And, you know, this is not anything formal. We did exactly what we needed to do. You know, we went through the first process. We had a protest. And I was pretty sure that, and I don't know, but I was pretty sure that they were going to do their $5,000 bid bond and file a formal protest, which drags us out 6 months. Not going to do that. It holds up the work. So we canceled the solicitation. We modified the scope. We put it back out on the street. We had two proposers. The board listened to the proposals, made a selection. It was all done in public, and it was done the right way. Our legals reviewed it. Matter of fact, our auditors, we took to our auditors, and they have reviewed it as well. You know, there's a lot of ifs or maybes or possiblys in some of that I read, and, you know, they'll say, if they fans a bus of candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. I'm confident we did it the right way. And, you know, as far as firing back the response, you probably won't see none of that.
Okay. Gotcha. One of the things that I have been – I had been seeing this myself, but I had had people ask me the same question. Three Mile Bridge, with us not having a fishing pier, because we're still working on that, getting it, you know – FEMA's going to take care of that. It's all done, but it's a timeline, right? The old fishing bridge, the second bridge, so to speak.
Yeah.
People are fishing off of Three Mile Bridge. They are not allowed to fish off of Three Mile Bridge, right?
That is correct. They are not supposed to be fishing off Three Mile Bridge.
That's
a combination of FDOT and FWC as far as enforcement.
Okay, so FDOT and FWC are the enforcement agencies there, because it's not safe for the pedestrians, not safe for the cars. It's certainly not safe for, you know, just there's boaters. You know, there's all kinds of reasons why not. But I know people have been asking me that, and like, yeah, they're doing it, but they're not supposed to be doing it. Speaking of which, what is our timeline on the replacement fishing pier?
So we are almost. I think we're at 60% design, and, you know, that's about a $17, $18 million replace as-is project. And
paid by FEMA, by the way, right? Paid entirely by FEMA.
By FEMA, yeah. I hate to say it slows it down, but it does add another obstacle. So every time you get reach a milestone design, you have to send that to FEMA. They have to review it, ask questions, and then send it back. Okay, you're good. Go to the next level, and then you got all your permitting that goes along with it. So that part kind of takes a while, but I think we're close to being able to get that on the street.
Okay, so we're, what, a year? 2 years?
Yeah, I would say year and a half.
Year and a half. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's something to look forward to. Last thing I had for you, I mean, I have all kinds of things I could always ask you, but last thing I wanted to mention to you is, it has occurred to me, and I've had other people ask me the same thing, now that Ross and Lane off of Brent is open, the light is operational south to the New Baptist Hospital, the turn lane, when you're going east, is a turn-only lane, which was fine before because you couldn't go anywhere to the right. That was an extended turn lane to go onto I-110. Well, now what you have is you get in that right-hand lane, and you now go through what is essentially supposed to be a turn lane, but you go right through it. Everybody does this because that's the way to approach I-110, and that's how we've done it. But if you're driving in the, not the turn lane, but the right-hand lane, and you're trying to get over to 110, and you don't know whether somebody's going straight through the intersection, it seems to me like that's a recipe for confusion and maybe a wreck. There's also, people have raised concerns to me about southbound on the access road and then turning westbound onto Brent, that there's some issues there because there's only the one turn lane. Is that something the county is looking at? Is Chris Phillips studying this?
He is working with his partners at DOT to take a look at that and see if there's any other opportunities for improvement there. I think once the hospital came online, some of this stuff kind of became a little bit more to the front, a little bit more visible, if you will. And so he is absolutely working with SCOT to take a look at that area.
And that is state road, so I get that they would be the primary agency. But, you know, I just wanted to make sure we're working on that. And good to hear that we are. And then just the last quick thing is a good news note is with the completion of the new locker rooms and meeting facility and maybe somewhat of a community center up at Ashton-Brosnahan Park, the SEC soccer tournament comes on Sunday, right?
Comes on Sunday, yeah. It'll be a good week of soccer, women's soccer there in SEC. And it'll be a good tournament. The field is looking fantastic. Parks and Recreation, along with Public Works, and IT's even involved in that project. They've done a fantastic job. Michael Rose and Adam Reed and TJ Williams, Jamie Higdon, they've all just come together. And what a great job they've done. I think in a very short amount of time, by the way. So it'll be a great tournament, a great week of soccer. If you love soccer, going out there. Last year we set the record for attendance for the SEC for this tournament, and we're hoping to do that again this year.
Outstanding. Well, you know, it's a good news note. I love to see Pensacola get more of the sports tourism because that cascades other people, other agencies, and, other conferences hear about that, and they think, oh, maybe that's a good place to go. It is a good place to come. Wes Moreno, he is the county administrator for Escambia County. Wes, as always, thank you so much for the work that you do for the county and helping keeping us informed every week. I appreciate the time, sir.
Thank you, Andrew.